Hello everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of the ECCDC's podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm thrilled to be reconnecting with Paula McLean, who is a friend and supporter of the ECCDC, and the author of numerous books that help non-profit leaders be the best they can be. Paula has worked for more than three decades with leaders and teams of Canadian not-for-profit organisations, including early childhood settings. She is a facilitator, educator, and advocate of raising the bar and improving practices amongst leaders at all levels, from team leaders to supervisors to managers to executive directors, as well as boards of directors. Join me as Paula shares her wealth of knowledge, experience, and insight into creating strong teams in early child care settings. So welcome, Paula. It's wonderful to have you on the ECCD podcast and to reconnect back with you.
Yeah, thank you, Jeanette. Thanks for inviting me to do this. It's a great topic. I think it's a really timely topic, and I'm delighted to be with you again.
Lovely. Great. So to start our conversation off this morning, could you share a bit about yourself with our listeners?
Sure. Thank you. So I've worked with and for the not-for-profit world and human services for the last three decades or so. I primarily work with nonprofit leaders and teams within the sector, including a fair amount of work with early learning and early childhood kinds of environments. I've written six books for nonprofit leaders, and that includes for boards of directors of nonprofits, as well as for leaders who are in paid positions. I facilitate everything from strategic planning to retreats to various kinds of planning exercises. I'm an educator. I'm an advocate for raising the bar in leadership in the not-for-profit sector. And for me, it's really important that we think of ourselves, all of us, as leaders. So whether or not you're in a program position, or whether or not you are a team lead or a coordinator or a manager, a director, executive director, all those are leadership roles. And we need to think about ourselves as being leaders within the work that we do. And I do have a website, learningforleaders.ca, so that if people want some free resources, some books, some other things that they might be interested in, I would welcome that. And you can also touch base with me through my website if you have questions that follow our session.
Lovely, thank you. So quite an extensive background in working with leaders and leadership. And yes, when we're thinking about early learning in childcare, for a little while now, we've been, you know, thinking of leaders, not just in job title, but as all being leaders in the field. So a really
absolutely
nice,
so true.
Really nice fit there. So just wondering if you could share your thoughts on what you believe are the characteristics of a strong team.
Sure. So I think that strong teams are happy, they're productive, and they're cohesive. So those are kind of three characteristics of a strong team. One of the things there's an old phrase that says, you know, there's no I in team. And someone then revised that to say, yeah, but there is a me in team. Good teams have individually skilled, competent people who are contributors. So a team is not just about everybody as a group doing everything together, right? That's not what a team looks like. Good teams inevitably have very competent, capable people who are working within the team individually, and that the team collectively benefits from those skills. And most really good teams give opportunities for every person to work to their strengths. They recognize the strengths in those people, in each member of the team, and they give individual members of the team to do opportunities to do what they do best every single day. Good teams are also really interdependent. They rely on each other. One person doesn't expect that they will do all of the work. One person doesn't have all of the skills that they need to do well. So interdependency is really about saying, I'll work to my strengths, Jeanette will work to her strengths, and we'll kind of bounce off each other to benefit the team itself, but also the children, the families that we have touch points with throughout the day. And so really good teams kind of are, they're not reliant on just individual contributions, but on each other. And then the final piece, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, I hope in a little bit more detail, but there's psychological trust within the team, and we'll talk about what that actually means. But what we're really saying is that it's okay to disagree, it's okay to have different opinions, it's okay to know that there's more than one right way to approach a particular issue in the team, a behavioral issue with a child, a learning opportunity with a child. The whole co-learning model says that we aren't looking at ourselves as the experts, that we're really looking at ourselves as individuals who will support each other. And that sometimes means that we have multiple ways or multiple opinions about how we might approach a child's learning or a way of making things happen within the team. So the whole idea of psychological safety is a really important characteristic of strong teams.
So some really great links that you were speaking to our early learning framework. So the capable, the competent, the co-learning piece as well. So I really like the way that you spoke to that, complementing each other, and also thinking about how we support each other. So often we do spend time and resources on team building, but that doesn't always create the lasting teams. So I'm curious, why do some team building efforts create long-term results and others don't?
Right. Great question, Jeanette. So we think about team building very often as to say, we're going to have a team building day, or we're going to have a pizza party and we're going to do some team building. We'll do a true colors thing, or we'll do a little learning exercise and et cetera. And we call that team building. The problem is, it's kind of like a flash in the pan. It's a one-off kind of activity. And as much as they are fun and they're exciting to be a part of, and everybody looks for the break in their day or the break in their week where we get together and we get, usually we share food and we have fun and we laugh and we play a little bit. There's nothing wrong with any of that. The problem is it doesn't have a sustained impact. So what the literature is saying and what we are doing in practice is we're shifting away from that kind of one shot kind of, oh, we'll do team building today. And inevitably, after you've done a team building event, the today event kind of spills over into some other fun that you might have the next day and the next day and the next day. The problem is it doesn't create those characteristics that we were just talking about. It doesn't create psychological safety. It doesn't create the sense of interdependence. So we need a deeper, more sustained, and we need to kind of ingrain it into the culture of every team. Every leader needs to understand what good leadership behaviors look like that will strengthen teams. We need to have opportunities to work together. And when we get into some of the practical strategies, I'll talk a little bit more about that. But Simon Sinek, some of your listeners will know, there's a leadership guru by the name of Simon Sinek. One of the things that Simon Sinek is, he was asked in a live training event, how do we create teaming? And his comment, and it was not tongue in cheek, he meant it dead seriously. He said, well, you have to have people work together. And that those one-off events, as much fun as they are, as much of the activities that are can be learning activities, and you'll have takeaways from that what might be helpful. You can't, there's no substitute for two people or three people working on a project together to create something new, or to plan a summer camp, or to go on an outing, or to do some of the things that need to be done that would improve within a room or a center. And so teaming is literally created by people working together, and that doesn't happen at a retreat. So we're really rethinking what team building per se, and really, really talking about it far more organically, far more. This is something that's built into every day and the way leaders practice their behavior, and when team members treat each other well, and when we listen to each other well, and we consider each other's points of view. That's really what creates strong teams.
I have to say, I absolutely love Simon. I love his work. Some really interesting points that you raise there. So what do ECE leaders and teams need to do to create happy and functional teams for the long term?
Right. So one of the questions that often happens to me if I'm training live is that people will come to me at the break and say, "My team just isn't coming together. My team is just really not a team at all." And they'll talk a little bit about why they think that's the case. And so, they've never had the whole act together. And I just want to say to them, just like kind of work as a team, people, right? And so one of the first things we need to do is to think about what our intentionality looks like. One of the things that leaders need to do and that team members can do with each other is to be intentional in what they say they want. And there's a huge amount of literature, as you're already aware, Jeanette, around the whole idea of what we tell ourselves is really powerful. And so if we tell ourselves that our team is kind of down in the dumps and never has gotten their act together, et cetera, we end up with problems. And we can tend to kind of reinforce that whole thing. So one of the first things we need to do is to articulate from a leadership perspective and from individual team members what we want from each other and what our intention is. And that needs to happen every single day, all day long. And it needs to happen all year long. So that whole idea of intention is the first piece. And then we need to have a set of positive and engaging and sustained behavior from leaders and team members that create a culture of communication, that encourage collaboration, and that invite team members to take feedback from each other and from leaders, from team leads, pedagogical leads, whatever they're called in your group. And that also creates a culture of giving feedback. So we got to be good at giving feedback. And we, many of us, have grown up in families and cultures that are reluctant to do that. And we'll jump to psychological safety again, and that is sometimes we fear what we think might be negative consequences. So the whole notion of communication, collaboration, and feedback is pivotal to what strong teams are. And it will literally take us months and years to get there. It's not something that just happens because we set the intention. It is what we need to do on a day-by-day basis. So if a team member comes to a leader in a room and says, "I'm not happy with so and so because they've left, all the toys are everywhere and they never put anything away and they don't engage the children in cleaning up the room, and I'm always left to do it all." Right? And so when we have that kind of problem, it's a complaint about a coworker. We're not going to get good teamwork if people are complaining about each other. However, the feedback might be legitimate. The question is, how do we teach the person who has a complaint to give the feedback well to their coworker rather than to the leader, to give it to the coworker well? And then how do we create a safe environment? And then how we teach that coworker who's not cleaning up the room to take the feedback with a high intention and fee and positive intention that it's intended to be. So those are the kind of characteristics that we have to build in the team, and they don't happen overnight. They take leadership diligence and teaching and coaching and support to be able to do that. So we need to not think about this being team building per se, but we need to think about it as a group of people who do their individual jobs well, but are also willing and learn how to collaborate with each other, communicate openly, and who trust each other and give each other feedback.
So that communication, collaboration, and that feedback so important, along with the trust as well. So
It is. And Jeanette, you've been in as many meetings as I've been over the years, I'm sure, where we talk about communication, but I'm not always sure that we know what we're talking about, right? What does communication actually look like? It communication looks like giving people information. It looks like giving feedback. It looks like giving direction. It looks like doing those things in a timely fashion. It looks like not holding back information that team members need to be able to do their jobs well. It means making sure that things are not going unsaid that need to be to shared with people. And we talk about the concept called feedback-rich culture. And a feedback-rich culture means all the time everybody is talking to each other about how we could raise the bar and do better and be better. So when we say the word communication, it's often kind of this amorphous, non-specified, non-clear thing that everybody, it's like motherhood and apple pie. Everybody hangs on to it as the holy grail or the thing that we really want to see. But I'm pretty sure a lot of times we don't really even know what that looks like.
Definitely. So thinking about going from that superficial to that
Indeed.
deeper level.
Absolutely.
So you liken team building to a garden, and you speak to a team being an organic growing thing. Can you share a bit more about that concept of the garden and growing?
Right. So if leaders plant the seeds, if we plant carrots in our garden in the spring and we expect to harvest something at the end of the year, we are not going to be able to harvest potatoes if we planted carrots. If we planted potatoes, we'll harvest potatoes. So one of the things we need to understand is that leaders play a pivotal role and team members play a role in support. That says we have to plant the right thoughts. We have to plant the right ideas. We have to plant the things that we want for our outcomes. Our outputs have to equal what we input. And this means that we as leaders need to pay attention to the thoughts that we have about our teams. So when someone comes up to me and asks me, like, how do I get my team on board? They're never on board. They're always kind of chaotic, et cetera, et cetera. We're planting carrots. And but what we're really saying is that we'd rather like to have potatoes at the end of the term because how do I get my team to be really good and cohesive? And those I want potatoes from my team, right? But what they're planting when they ask the questions of my team is bad, is we're actually planting an entirely different produce. And so as leaders, we need to ask the right questions and we need to have that mindset. And it's contagious, just like negativity is contagious, just like complaining is contagious. Positive attitude and positive things happening in the team from a leader to all team members will say things. So if I asked you the question, why can't my team just get along? I'm suggesting I have a team that's struggling, a team that's dysfunctional, a team that I'm frustrated with, a team that's frustrating each other. If I ask a different question and say, we're a work in progress, good things take time. How can I support that team to be better every day? Then I've set a different intention. I've planted a different seed. So that's the organicity of teams. And again, it's a whole season of growth to get us to the end product. So we can't be negative and talk down about people in our team. We can be realistic and say some of our team members struggle, but our challenge is always to ask the right question is if I have team members who are struggling, rather than complaining about the struggle, is how did I get them out of that place into a better place? What's our res shared responsibility? What's the role of a leader to be able to do that? And as we talked in our previous session, Jeanette, the leadership isn't ever one thing. It's about 100 things, and doing 100 things well is why it takes forever to learn how to be a good leader. So when we, from a perspective of a leader, look at the organicity of a team, we're always looking about what seeds am I sowing, right? Am I complaining? Am I trying to be positive when I'm in the room or I'm in the center with a team? At the same time, I'm complaining to my boss or my coworkers or my family or my friends about my team never having their act together. And those two things can be at war inside your own head. And I'm suggesting that it's really the lion that we want to feed is the one that says to us, I want to grow these seeds, and those seeds are the positive kinds of things. The other point that I think is really important is the leader is always learning from their team. And so it's not just the leaders coaching their team, the leaders teaching their team. It's that I think most of your listeners, and certainly I, have had the experience of having worked with some pretty difficult people and sometimes some pretty dysfunctional teams. And when I look back on that, a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, I think I learned so much from those difficult experiences, right? I learned more about how people think and what motivates them and how to get them unstuck and all those kinds of things. And when we were thinking about how we build a team, we really have to think about what's my learning path as a leader? What are the things that I need to acquire by way of that? So when we start shifting our mindset, we begin to think about better rather than being stuck.
Lovely, lovely. I love that concept of growing a garden, paying attention and giving time, just like we do when we grow a garden. I must admit, I'm a keen gardener, so maybe that's why I'm drawn to that analogy, those seeds, what we want to focus on planting, that seed. So you spoke to mindset. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the role that mindset plays in creating strong early learning in childcare teams?
Right. So the phrase, whatever we focus on grows stronger, is really powerful here. And I think it's really important for us to know what we're focusing on. So if we're in some tall grass in a forest and we're walking on a path, the first person to go through that path has a bit of a challenge because there's no path there. And so they have to tamp down the grass as they're doing their walk. Every time that you walk on that path subsequent to that, the path becomes easier. So the idea of mindset is really about saying, I set my mind on a positive path. I struggle a little bit as I get things going, but every time that I do this, as time goes on, the path gets easier. And there's a great deal of brain science that supports this idea that neurons that fire together wire together. So we literally create connections in our brains, which allow us to do things in a more easy fashion the next time. Great example of this is if you like math or you hate math. If you like math, I happen to like math, the more I practice mental math, the better I get at it. So the more we practice a mindset that says, my team's going to get there, right? We've got some stuff to learn. I'm the person to bring them through that process. I don't have to know everything. I can read, I can have a coach to work with. I can talk to my supervisor or my manager about it. I don't have to be perfect at what I'm doing, but I'm the person that will get this team from where they are to where they want to be. And that we'll do that together, that this is a partnership. And so, asking ourselves when we have a mindset that's positive, we say, what are some of the examples of things that went well today? What are some of the small wins? Some of the wins are so tiny. They are so tiny. We're working at toileting a child, and that child actually got through the whole morning without an accident. It's a huge win for the whole team, let alone for the child and the family, right? So these are so tiny sometimes, but we often think, oh, well, that was good. We didn't have an accident this morning, and we kind of cast it off. And we think, no, that was a win, right? Where do I see some of the areas for growth and improvement? The things that we're working on as a team or as individuals. How did we live up to our potential today? What were examples of things that just fell into place that surprised us, perhaps, or that we've been working on for a while and went better than they have? So we need to then, for the team and for ourselves, point out the value of the good things that are happening. That mindset makes a huge difference. It's almost like an insurance policy or even a vaccination, if you will, for the team against negativity, right? Because it's really hard to be down in the dumps and negative if you're a member of a team that is like 95% positive. Right. And even when the part of the day doesn't go well, if your take on that part of the day that doesn't go well inside the team is, well, there's always tomorrow. Right? We did it better. We're just not there yet. And tomorrow's another day and we'll figure this out. And if that, even for the hard moments in a day, is the take of that, it's very difficult to stay in a negative place or to stay in an anti-team or an anti-management or an anti-positive perspective. And so that is really where mindset figures in well. And this is a leadership behavior. It's a really important leadership behavior because when people see it from leaders, they just like young children, they will imitate. I just like, this is what I see. This is what's good behavior. This is what I should show. And that is a part of a strategy for strengthening teams.
I love that, the vaccine against negativity and that positivity being contagious, yeah, and celebrating those wins. I also liked what you spoke to around focusing, what we focus on grows stronger and I guess makes us stronger. So how can we make sure that we are focusing on those positive things? So just wondering if we could shift gear a little bit and maybe you could share some practical ideas for teams and leaders to use to strengthen themselves and the team.
Sure. So, Jeanette, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go quickly, fairly quickly through. I've got a baker's dozen. I have 13 things on my list here. But one of the things I think is really important is to find the ones that fit for your team, because each of these are not going to be, it's like, when you sit down to a whole table of food at Christmas time, there's always your favorite things that you're going to eat, right? So if you're at a family supper, and there's things that you would like to try that you haven't had before, and there's things that you haven't tried and that people have brought and that you want to taste those things, and then you have your favorites. And so I think it's really important when people are listening to this list that they think about, is that a good fit for me? Because they're not, it's not a one size fits all. It's not a magic bullet. These are the things that are going to work for everybody. But look at this list and then filter it through your own knowledge of your own team, your own leadership skills, your own biases in terms of what works and what doesn't work, and use the things that you think are working. And the other part is, if you are tied to some things that are not working, my suggestion is pick two or three of the things from this list and break out of the mold. The mystery writer, Rena Mae Brown, said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And so I'm going to say these are 13 things, some of which you might be already trying and aren't working. Well, let's try something different. Continuing to do the same things over and over again are likely not to give you something that's better. So let me just kind of dive in, and again, I would really welcome any of your listeners that are hearing these and saying, "Yeah, but Paula, I'm not sure how to implement this in my team." I'm entirely happy to respond to an email from any of your listeners and engage in a longer chat about some of the things that might be helpful to them. So the first one is that we need to share planning and collaborative decision making. There's a phrase in leadership that says nothing about us without us. The problem is we can't engage everybody in every decision, or we wouldn't be getting any of the other work that needs to be done. But the process of engagement, when we are working with people, is absolutely important. And that can be done on the fly. It doesn't have to be done in a sit-down meeting. It could be done in a team meeting where we ask some questions of people about what are your ideas about summer camp this year, or what are your ideas of how we might be able to up the level of, excitement in the room when we're working on a new project with children. What are your ideas for some new arts and crafts kinds of things that we might do? So we ask people questions that engage them in the process of that, rather than saying, here's our plan for how we're going to run the summer camp. So always better to ask for input than feedback, right? We say, here's the plan, how are we going to run our summer camp? And then we say, what is your feedback about this? People will say, well, do you really want feedback? It looks like you've got it all laid out. It looks like it's a done deal. And so they're not feeling that they're engaged or a participant in that. So much better to say, I'm going to ask you guys to write your ideas down. Here's a piece of flip chart paper. Here's a whiteboard. As you walk by, write an idea down. Right? And so it doesn't have to be done as a sit-down meeting where we're actually planning. It can actually be something that's an ongoing part of the work that you do. Stretch assignments are wonderful. Second one is the stretch assignments are mini tasks or mini projects that match the skills of individuals or one or two team members And that really maximizes the talents of those people to be able to accomplish something important. So let's suppose you have a licensing thing that you have to comply with, and you're not exactly in compliance yet, but you have somebody who really is good at getting things organized and making things work and understands what the rules are that you are have to play by for licensing. Give that person or those two people a task that works to their strengths. That anything that strengthens the individuals will strengthen the team because people are happy, and happy people tend to get along with other happy people, right? And so this is not just about getting a task done, it is also about working to people's strengths. If you have a particular strength and you get to do it every single day, the literature is really compelling. You like your work, you like your job, you like the people that work there, and you're more likely to stay. So it impacts on employee retention, and the whole team benefits from that. Third one is to get people teaming. This is the Simon Sinek thing. Is what? How do we create teaming? We put people together who are given a project. So to get practical skills done, and give in them independence to get this done. Don't micromanage. Don't hover. Don't, fuss over them. How's it going? How's it going? Are you clearing your tasks? Well, if you need any help, come and get me. Right. When we micromanage things, people feel not trusted. But when we give an assignment to somebody who's capable, we're talking about people who don't need to be taught how to do something, that they're working to their strengths, and we put them in a team of two, they learn about their colleague. They learn things that their colleague likes and doesn't like. They learn how to work in a team of two. We see this in academia all the time. Every single person who's been to a college or university course has been assigned a task, and usually you're assigned a task in groups of two. We're not just doing that to lighten the load so that everybody gets that. We're doing that to teach people to work together. So finding tasks and teaming people together is really important. Fourth one is to use peer coaches. When you have strengths in the team, why not multiply those strengths by using them to teach other people how to do things, right? So we magnify and multiply when we have somebody who knows how to do something and we ask them to coach other people. It's really important that we are confident that this person is skilled. We can't say, oh, gee, Jeanette, teach me how to ski, but you don't know how to ski, right? So when we're teaching somebody, to do something, it's important we choose people that have strengths and competencies and use them as coaches for other people. Fifth thing on the list is collaborative reflective practice. This is built into many really strong teams, and they really like it as a practice. And the first question is, what do I or we or you do really well? So, where are my strengths? Where is there still some room for improvement is the second question. And the third question is, based on what I'm good at and what I still need to learn, what are the actions or the steps that I might take to strengthen that? We do that as an ongoing process, and we ask it both individually as a collective reflective practice, but also as a team. What are we good at as a team? Where do we excel? What are we rock stars at? Where could we still learn and grow? And what steps will we take to improve that? We begin that whole process of saying we have a shared goal, a shared consensus on what we want to be able to target. Sixth thing on the list is to create a practice of solving problems, not finding problems. Finding problems is cheap, free, easy. And very often, team members or junior supervisors or leaders will say, it's above my pay grade to solve these. And I love a model. And by the way, this model came out of a childcare environment that I do consulting and training work with in Hamilton, Ontario. And they use a 1-3-1 model. And it's one problem, not two problems, three problems, or five problems. Three ideas for how that problem might be solved. And then, based on those three ideas, what do we think the strongest idea of that is? This can be done individually, it can be done as a group. So when someone comes and says, people are late coming back from breaks. Okay, one problem. Not four problems. Not people are late from breaks, and sometimes they're late getting to work, and sometimes they leave early. No, those are three problems. One problem. Which problem would you like to work on? Well, coming back like from breaks. Okay. What are your three ideas for how we might address that problem? Why is it happening? And then what's the one idea that, and maybe that one idea is actually a mashup of the three ideas, but what's the idea that might help solve that problem? When leaders model this and say, okay, I understand the problem. What could we do about it? And I like we rather than what could you? Because if people are coming back late from breaks, it's not just a team problem, it's a leader problem. And then what are the things that we might do that might improve that as a team? What's the culture of our team? Is it kind of loosey-goosey? You can kind of come back from breaks. If you're 5 minutes late, no big deal. You know, if you come back and you're in the room, but you're still washing up your dishes, well, you know, who knows? Are we actually clear on what our rules are? So when we ask people to become problem solvers, not problem finders, we build that sense of anticipation. If I'm the leader in the team and someone comes with me that question, they expect from me that I'm going to ask them, what are your ideas for the solutions that we need to put in place to solve that problem? If that's predictable leadership behavior, the team will start to talk to each other. If we take this problem to Paula, Paula's going to say, how are we going to solve it? So we better have some ideas. What are my ideas? You guys tell me what my ideas are. And all of a sudden, you've sparked communication in the team. You've sparked team problem solving. You've sparked idea generation because they know I'm going to ask them to do something more than bring me a problem. The seventh thing on the list is that leaders at all levels, this is team leads, pedagogical leads, coordinators, supervisors, managers, directors, executive directors. Every leader in the system, regardless of their level, has to become skilled and willing to manage performance issues and conduct issues of members of the team. One of the first questions I ask when I'm in a coaching call with a leader about a team issue is that, do you have one member in your team who's underperforming or doing bad stuff? And about 95% of the time, Jeanette, they tell me, yep, we got one bad apple, right? What's happening is that person's behavior, performance, conduct, attitude, if you will. We don't fix attitude. We look at behaviors that suggest there's an attitude. But what we are talking about is that whole thing will come caving down. So it's almost like the anti-insurance policy, right? Where that one person can undo all of the other good that's being done by the leader and other members of the team. Conduct issues, which is behavior, and performance issues, which is the person not doing their job responsibilities properly. If they don't get addressed, the team will not excel because there's always somebody who's picking up the ball from that person not doing their job. There's always somebody complaining to somebody else who's complaining to somebody else who's saying this person's not doing their job well or their behavior is bad. And so when we are not addressing those things, we will not be able to create the team that we deserve. So absolutely vital that leaders understand that their job has to include that uncomfortable conversation, that difficult conversation, that feedback that says to an employee, stop doing this, start doing that. Next one is that we need to create rules that don't apply to 1% of the people. We want rules inside our teams and organizations that apply to 99%. So what I see in teams sometimes is excessive rule giving that applies to everybody, but really it's to address a problem or an infraction, a mistake, a something by one or two people. Right? And so dress code is a great example of this. We create rules around what we can wear and what we can't wear. And very often, 90% of your team, you know, if you have a team of seven, six of them are doing fine. They always dress appropriately for their work day, for the safety, for whatever is expected from them that particular day. And one person might not be. Go back to the previous strategy. Give that person feedback and address that issue rather than create a dress code policy which applies to everybody, but 95% of them are doing fine. Right. So we have a tendency to overregulate the obvious. And when we do that, we are actually breaking down the connective tissue of the team. We're breaking down because some team members are saying, what the heck do we need all these rules for? Like, isn't that really obvious? I've never broken that rule. Like, it's obvious to me that I don't have to be back from breaks on time, or it's obvious to me that I have to wear appropriate clothing for my day. And so why do we have all these rules? And when we overregulate teams, we have too many rules. When we are overstating the obvious, we create resentment. We create team members who become anti-management, anti-leadership. because they're talking about, do they think we're stupid? And of course, you don't think they're stupid, but when you create too many rules, that's implied, right? Is that we can't do our own thinking. We don't know. We don't have good common sense. So I really caution leaders that we can undo some of our really good and positive things by being too rule driven and having too many. And sometimes we don't call them rules. We call them guidelines, or we call them, policies, procedures. There's lots of different rules, but they're rules. The next one is that every leader at every level has to have a designate leader. If we want to build teams, we need to create depth. I'm living in Ontario right now. I'm actually from Alberta. The Blue Jays almost made it to the World Series, to win the World Series, and they played so well. And if I was to ask you of the Blue Jays team, how many pitchers do they have? The answer is they have like 9, 10, 11 pitchers, right? Our teams in early learning, early childhood, very often have one leader in the room, and that's it. And if we don't broaden that base, we don't strengthen the team, and we don't support retention. If there's no place to go but to another room or another childcare or another early learning environment, that's the only place we can do. We're going to invite people to leave to be able to become stronger and better at their work. So what we really want to do is to create a model called Team Designate. And I've got several agencies that are working with this model that are doing exceptionally well. And the Team Designate, a team lead designate, means if you're the team lead in my room and I'm an ECE, I get a chance to be your shadow, your follower upper, your person who will do parts of the things when you are gone for an hour to a meeting, when you're gone on holidays, and I get to learn to be a leader in that role. I go to all the training that you go to. I participate in all of the learning opportunities that you participate in. And then I have kind of like a leader in waiting, right? We have somebody in the wings that's ready to be in a leadership role, either on a short-term basis when you're gone as the lead. Or on a longer term basis, when a position opens up and I now have the training and some experience and some opportunities to learn and grow, and I can apply for that job. When we talk about training teamwork, this all creates retention as well. Last few here, that we can need to connect the team's work and purpose to the mission of the organization. This is also a Simon Sinek opportunity, and that is connect to your why. People need to know that they're not just there for the day to make children safe, or to have some co-learning opportunities, or to have, children's work is play. And so those are parts of it. But what's the real connection? Why are we actually here? Right? And what's the role of that? And every organization has a different mission statement. Every organization has a different why. So in each team, we need to say, what do we do every day in a team that connects to our agency, our organization's why? And when people connect to the why, there's some really compelling literature on this now. There's a wonderful book called Teams Alive by Dan Cable. And Dan Cable's book says the more connected we are to why, the more likely we are to feel a member and have a sense of belonging. So good teams have senses of belonging, and connecting to why is an important part of that. And we could have a whole nother call on connecting to purpose. When change seems necessary, we need to tell people, here is the problem, or here's the opportunity that changes to address. A lot of people on the line level don't get why things have to change. Sometimes our funder has changed something. Something has changed in licensing. Sometimes there's an opportunity to be able to, I had a team members in a group that their room and their space was under renovation, and all of them said it was just disruptive and it was awful. And there's drywall dust everywhere, and we just had to be constantly cleaning, and the children didn't get the support that they would normally get, and it was just a total mess. And nothing was communicated by the senior management in this particular organization that said, we just got a $100,000 renovation grant. Right? This is huge for our center. This is huge for our opportunities. There was no information that flowed. So back to that idea that sometimes we say communication, but we're not really sure what that is. So managing change well inside the team and at higher levels in the organization is really important. I mentioned earlier a feedback-rich environment where leaders are role models for and team members are engaged in the process of giving each other feedback, positive feedback, as well as constructive feedback that improves people's performance. And that we also teach the really important skill at learning how to get feedback and take it from other people, accept it, understand it, listen to it well, look at different perspectives that di maybe are different and disagree with your normal way of looking at things in your workplace. And then the final one is to work to each person's strengths, and know that they have opportunities to do what they do best, absolutely every day. I think we talk about working to strengths, but very often we don't say, Jeanette, what are your strengths? What are you really passionate about? What excites you? What floats your boat? What's your currency? What fills your bucket? What are the things that you could be doing that really lift you up in a day? And work to those strengths that say, and again, happy people make other people happy. It's contagious. So those are the Baker's dozen.
Yeah, lovely. Some absolutely wonderful strategies there, Paula. Thank you for sharing those. And we will share in the show notes some PowerPoint slides that Paula's put together and that have those 13 strategies on there. So don't worry if you're busy trying to make notes, we will share that with you. So just check the
Great
show notes
idea.
below.
Thank you.
So we are coming to the end of our time together, Paula, and you did speak to psychological safety earlier. Could you just talk a little bit about what that is and why it's important in creating strong teams?
Thanks, Jeanette, for that wrap-up opportunity. Psychological safety is really four things. It's the freedom to suggest new and different ways of working together. So, feeling safe doing that, creating a culture within your team that encourages it. The second one is to develop and teach skills about how to give feedback and create a feedback-rich culture. Because when people can give feedback and receive feedback well, it makes us feel safe. It makes us feel like we could make a mistake and not even know maybe that we made that mistake, but that someone will tell us or point it out to us in a gentle and kind way that will help us elevate and not make that mistake again. We need role modeling from leaders that is role modeling from a point of vulnerability. And if a leader says, I made a mistake, mistakes happen. Here's what I learned. Here's what I'll definitely do different in the future. If that's the script that leaders work from when they are making mistakes, it invites other people to feel safe to do the same thing. And we role model exactly those four things. I made a mistake. Mistakes happen. Here's what I learned. Here's what I'll do differently. When those four things come from leaders, people absorb in the team those behaviors so that they can do it too. And then the final one is permission and learned comfort to speak up when things are not going well. And to be solution focused. So that 1-3-1 model, you can use that. But just the whole idea of, I think we could be better at this, and I want to put this on the table. I want to bring this forward. And to know that you can do that without punishment or retaliation or anything else. This is a learned skill. Again, as all of the things we talked about with team building today go, we will not be able to flip a switch and all of a sudden have all of this there. But to learn to be comfortable with being able to speak up and say, leadership makes it safe here for us to say what we need to say and for me to make suggestions about how we might make it better. So those are the four pieces of psychological safety that are important.
Thank you, Paula. What a wonderful way to wrap up our conversation
Yeah.
this morning. The solution focused as well. That's really speaking to me. So, Paula, thank you so much for sharing your time with me and our listeners today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you about how we can build stronger teams within early learning and childcare sector.
It was a pleasure to be here again. I hope that we get a return visit at some point in time, Jeanette. Thank you for this opportunity. And I hope we hit some good points with your
Yeah,
listeners.
lovely. Thank you so much, once again. And yes, look forward to connecting with you in the near future. Thank you.
All right.
So that wraps up our conversation on creating strong teams in early childhood settings. Thank you for joining Paula and me for this month's episode of the ECCDC podcast, and for Paula for so generously sharing her time with us. So many wonderful practical strategies that can be incorporated into programs at all levels. Please check out Paula's PowerPoint in the show notes below for a recap of her Baker's Dozen of ways to strengthen early childhood education teams. One of my key takeaways is that we need to shift our lens from one of solely team building to one of creating stronger teams. How we can go deeper than one-off standalone activities to multifaceted experiences that create and keep the momentum going. If this podcast has sparked your curiosity and you would like to learn out more about leadership in early learning and childcare, join Paula for her three-part series, Beyond the Basics of Leadership, Enhancing Your Skills and Deepening Your Understanding of Leadership in Early Learning and Childcare, which she will be facilitating via webinar on Wednesdays, April the 22nd, May the 20th, and June the 17th. You can register for Paula's sessions via the ECCDC website under the Professional Learning tab, or click on the link below in the show notes. Also, check out the show notes to find the links to free resources that Paula has kindly shared and her contact details if you have any questions. And lastly, if you liked this podcast, please leave a comment below. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe. I look forward to reconnecting with you all in March for the next episode of the ECCDC podcast.